Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I hope everyone's enjoying the new intro.
I'm enjoying it every day.
Every day, good. Does it make you happy?
Absolutely.
Good. Something has to. So this week is actually, I got to sit down with the creative team of Face Value Comics.
Face Value Comics?
Yes.
Tell me more about them.
Well, yeah, I will. They started out as an organization working with kids with autism. And it was a husband and wife team. And after a while, it grew into Face Value Comics.
Hmm.
And the comic's about, the main character has autism, and it's for teaching children with autism how to deal with different emotions and so forth.
That sounds pretty cool.
It is. And it was a great interview, and I hope everyone enjoys it. And if you haven't checked it out, jump on our website, and we actually review their first comic.
Nice.
So, hey, Ben, you read comic books, right?
I've been known to read a couple here and there.
Yeah, you know, do you find it hard to keep up with all the comics out there?
Do I? I have kids, Dave. You know how often they expect you to feed them?
What? Wait, feed them? I've been doing something wrong then.
I mean, you'd think they could fend for themselves. There's animals out there.
I put a bowl of kibble and some newspaper down. I thought that's all I had to do.
Well, apparently not.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. I'm going to get in trouble. Yeah, so, and you know what? There's all these great new comics that come out all the time, and I don't know where to jump in.
Yeah, I don't know who the hell all these new characters are. It's just too much to keep up with.
Well, luckily, Luis Cabral took care of this issue for us.
I love this man already.
Yes.
Tell me more.
He started a great podcast called Recap. And in this podcast, every week, he recaps the previous issues of all the comics coming out that week.
I'm intrigued. This sounds very useful.
It is. I mean, it's a huge time saver. Like, you know, JLA number 12 is coming out this week. I haven't read JLA number 11, but after I listened to his podcast, I got caught up, and now I feel like I can run out and get number 12 and not feel behind.
Awesome.
Exactly.
That could save so much time.
Yes. So if you're like Ben and I, and you love saving time, and you love comic books, well, then you should head on over to clockworkl.ca/recap and listen to that podcast right now.
What am I doing here?
I don't know. You get out there. Go. Quick.
Hey, Dave, you know it's not a time saver?
What?
Trying to feed your children and give them a bath at the same time.
Oh, jeez. You know what? I tell you what. Just, again, newspaper on the floor, bowl of kibble, put on your iTunes, and listen to Recap.
I'll give it a try.
All right, then. So, you everyone out there, go listen to Recap after you listen to Face Value Comics. And enjoy.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave. And I'm flying solo tonight because I have three guests with me, actually. They're the creative team of Face Value Comics, and it is David and Angela Cott and Scott. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
So, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Face Value Comics?
Sure. Face Value Comics is the first comic book to feature a superhero reminiscent of the golden age of comic books, and he's the first hero to have autism. It is a line that we have geared for kids, middle school kids, with the intent and purpose to give kids with autism a hero like themselves. And we want to be able to teach some emotional skills, some coping skills, and better communication, not just for kids on the spectrum, but for all readers. We decided to follow the antiquated comic book code authority to make a family-friendly piece of entertainment that would also be educational.
That's actually a great cause. I don't think it's, personally, I don't think it's antiquated, the comics code, in the sense of, I know many people my generation who missed the golden age. You know, the hero is the good guy. You know,
right.
there's no gray lines. There's no, is he the good guy? There's no anti-heroes. You know, Superman was truth, justice in the American way. And you knew that when you read the book, you know. So saying it's antiquated, I think, you know, there's still people who long for that. But I have to ask, you chose autism, as your platform, is that because you know someone who's autistic, or is it just the cause you believe in?
A little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. I had a lot of clients as a professional therapist who were on the autism spectrum, mm-hmm. and that actually started the genesis of what would become Face Value Comics. One of the skills that I had acquired through my PhD research was understanding better communication techniques for people with autism, and some research that I had worked on now, I guess, 3 years ago, started working on facial feature recognition. And that's the premise that the face and muscles contort in a certain kind of universal way mm-hmm. whenever a person has certain core feelings like anger, sadness, or even happiness. And that those expressions could have names and could be easily identified. A lot of people on the autism spectrum have difficulties navigating some social situations, so having a way, a reference to help understand what another person might be feeling helps build empathy. And as a therapist, what I was doing was drawing a lot. And sadly, if you knew any quality of my artwork, you would find that that might be problematic. but I would have other kids just even copy with a smirk, circle and smiling face, or an angry face with even some jagged eyebrows and things of that nature to indicate that they kind of got what these general emotions were, and they demonstrated some success. Part of my job as a therapist was trying to gauge and show performance enhancement, acquisition, and use of certain social skills, and found that there was a marked improvement. What I was doing was reinventing the wheel each time with a new client, a new sheet of paper, and a new drawing, and just doing that again and again. While the overall effect was useful, I found myself wasting a lot of paper, and I thought it'd be neat if I could collect these into a binder and have them done maybe even professionally. But the idea of facial feature recognition is that we're able to pause, like a snapshot, to freeze frame an emotional expression on a static page that a person could go back and reference again and again, that they could look at it, try to understand it, and then trying to put it into context. I had kids tell me their own social stories that would kind of match an expression, but I found it sometimes it was a little bit beyond them. They couldn't think creatively on the spot, so I ended up making some stories and generalizations to help them to get started. And I thought this would be kind of neat to put in a comic book, that would be a three-tiered approach. That's when my more academic mind started kicking in and thinking, all right, phase one is showing the facial expression. Part two is putting a thought bubble or speech bubble to give the emotion language for a person to actually say, I'm angry or I'm sad. And then captions help place the entire situation in context, that a person could, again, go back and back forth to see the story and understand it. And we just happened to use a fun science fiction steampunk storyline to help make it more entertaining. But the core values of the facial expressions and the expressed language for the emotions are in the heart of the story.
Well, that's actually fascinating. I never realized that about autism before. And it's actually, you know, I think it's an important thing for people who don't understand autism to learn. So what you're saying is then in the art, the facial expressions are very important in the story that you're trying to tell.
Yes.
So I would ask Sky, the artist, do you find it difficult sometimes to have those expressions come across in the way that David wants them?
Well, not exactly, no. Like I said, I've been, from what my mother told me, I've been drawing ever since I was 3 years old. I'm 57. And I've always had a great love of art. And in order to do it, it's like what a friend of mine once says, you sometimes have to be outside to hurt to become an artist or a creative individual. Because now you need to see things objectively. Well, it's just like, you know, what David and Angela go through is the fact that when you deal with people, you can see things that other people just take for granted. In the words of Sherlock Holmes, people see, but they don't observe. And sometimes that's just put down in stories and art. And, you know, it just makes it that much easier, because it's like what David was talking about, the facial recognition. No matter what country you're in, certain emotions you see,
Right.
So, I know I've been, like I said, I've been going for the longest time, and now, you know, it's really nice that I can have someone I can actually correspond with, kind of like things on the same level when it comes to ideas as far as, you know, I've worked with other people before, but this is the first time, or one or a few times, that I've actually worked with somebody who's someone saved, you know, me and his life, or, you know, I consider myself lucky to be working with them.
Okay.
That's how we look at it, working with each other.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then, Angela, so I guess I don't want to be presumptuous, but you guys are husband and wife?
Yes.
Okay. And what is your role within the company? Or within the
company? Well, I was elected as the president of Autism at Face Value, which is the foundation behind Face Value Comics. This is my role is multifaceted. I do a lot of things to help support Dave and Sky, as well as within the creative process. I help with the storyline and writing script, as well as a lot of behind-the-scenes administrative work to maintain our focus with Autism at Face Value. At the end of the day, it's about the kids that we're writing this story for, mm-hmm. to serve as a teaching tool, as well as an entertaining and fun story that's super family-friendly and rare in the comics world too much today.
Yes, no, I definitely agree. I actually had I just did an interview with another artist, and that's one of, and a writer. He's a writer and an artist, and that's one of the things we were talking about is one of the things you find when you meet a lot of independents out there, they all do the same basic gray anti-hero story, you know, the Punisher or the Wolverine type character who, yep. who wants revenge for something, and then by the end of the first or second issue, he gets his revenge, and it's like, well, you know, there isn't much of a story after that, and why is everyone writing the same story, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and then another good friends of mine run a company called HB Comics, and their main character is Laser Man, and they actually have just gotten to their 13th issue, I believe. And it's a very family-friendly comic. I mean, they're fans of the golden age of comics, you know, where the good guys were good guys and the bad guys were bad guys. And that's very much how the comic reads. And I have to say that, you know, I read issue one of Face Value, and it's, you know, there's definitely that story is there again, you know. It does harken back to the golden age. And speaking of issue one, I found it interesting. It is steampunk, and it takes place in the far future.
Yes.
We're still on Earth, but it's way in the future, and there's all these, you know, aliens and other races that we didn't know about now that, you know, that all take place in the story. Was that just a creative thing, or was that done on purpose?
A little bit of, again, a little bit of both. The University of Massachusetts Lowell had an art therapy class done a few years ago where they focused on steampunk. It was called Steampunkinetics. Mm-hmm. And they invited kids on the spectrum to participate in their art therapy. And what they found was statistically significant. A lot of the kids on the spectrum did exceptionally well with the steampunk genre, largely impacted because of the cause and effect relationships. The seeing the gears and mechanisms work, you could see how something actually worked. Me, myself, you know, I have a toaster and I have no idea how it works. I plug it in and it works.
Right.
But steampunk with the cogs and gears, you can kind of see things, literally, the wheels turning. And that really appealed to the kids. Another neat thing about the steampunk genre is while you do have your certain diehard fans who have in their mind hard core rules about what steampunk is or isn't, the general genre of steampunk really is that, punk. It is a rebellion against some rules and situations, and for us to be able to break away from convention, to have people look at characters and our world in a different way was something that we really wanted. The characters, including the tree folk, the Chillaxin,
right.
That was kind of a fun thing because the name Chillaxin was just kind of more of a kind of a modernized word. I heard lots of kids always say that they were just relaxing or chilling out, and it became chillaxing.
Right.
So to kind of show that they were more peaceful and calm race, chillaxing. They'll have a very important role based on their longevity and patience later on in the comics that mankind typically doesn't show. The Jar'tavi, the kind of the seahorse-like creatures, we wanted to include bits and elements of air, sea, and land to kind of capture all the elements kind of over our planet. And the Jar'tavi were the more sea creatures, and never really saw a whole lot done with seahorses. Sure, there's different kind of fish folk and fish aliens, and we could have gone with a Cthulhu kind of thing, which I still don't rule out, but it's kind of fun. But the Jar'tavi, just because they're one of the few sea creatures who share their gender roles rather equally with raising their young, kind of egalitarian. We kind of saw them as a nod to the Victorian prim and proper kind of rights and privileges, and just an opportunity to have fun with the uniqueness of their character. And the Shimmer were a group of kind of almost hummingbird angels, I guess you could kind of say, although there's no real religious tones implied or expressed at all in the comic. We try to keep things as neutral as we can to make it appeal to more people. Right. But the Shimmer are a race of telepathic, all-female winged warriors. They're drawn similar to the ancient Mayan or Aztec traditions, and pulling and making some of our own mythologies. The Shimmer kind of came back to wonder what happened in 2012 when the Earth was supposed to go through this great change, where a lot of people believed the Earth was supposed to end. Right. And the Shimmer kind of want to figure out what's going on and why hasn't the world changed, or what changes has it gone through. So that's what the Shimmer represent. And then we have a bunch of other fun aliens here and there too, and there's more to come.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I didn't pick up on Chillaxin until you just explained it, but now that's kind of funny. And I definitely have heard kids use that expression. I think I've heard my son say it a couple times. What kind of feedback have you gotten from the comic, from both, you know, people on the spectrum and regular comic fans?
It's been amazing. We've gotten such a positive and overwhelmingly amounts of thank you.
Encouragement.
Yes. Keep doing it. Thank you for doing this. Keep doing it. Dave's gotten some very heart-filled letters, emails, video. It's really amazing.
It has been a privilege to be able to think that my simple idea, I'm just a man, that my idea about a comic book, of all things, not some kind of PhD research paper that I've done, not some great discovery that I've unearthed, but a comic book has appealed to so many people and has touched so many people in just the month that we've been out. And I've been getting some videos of families whose kids are on the spectrum, and one in particular was from the UK. We're here in South Central Pennsylvania, in York, and to have fans comment from the UK or Australia is kind of overwhelming. But the one video was his mother showed him the Facebook page and told him about the character, and the boy pointed to the screen, to the picture of Michael, and then pointed to himself. Kids need and want heroes like themselves. I was talking to the owner of one of our local comic shops, and we are on our third run of replying some of the comic book stores since Christmas Eve, and that's been quite an honor to work with friends, to see them now carrying the product, and I walk in as a seller, as a not just a normal patron picking up their subscription. But the one owner, even today, commented and said, you know, I know we talked at length about why I was doing the comic book and what I had hoped to achieve with it. And he said, you're doing it. Everybody that's coming into the store tells me a story about who they're buying this comic book for, about their son or daughter or their nephew or cousin or a friend of theirs, or they were out of town and knew that they had this comic book in the stores and they wanted to pick it up. Teachers want to pick it up for their classrooms. And they have a long discourse with the shop owner about why they're buying this comic book. And he said it's such a personal experience that people are sharing their families and their friends and their stories about autism and about acceptance with a shop owner selling comic books. And that connection, that level of social engagement, social awareness, is really what we're kind of all about, Dave.
Wow, that's actually amazing. And it's really great to hear. You know, it's something I was thinking about, too, is that we're hearing more about autism nowadays, and there's more awareness of it. But no one's doing anything like this, you know, because the one thing you hear the most is that it affects, you know, children the strongest. And this is something for children, you know, and no one else is doing it. There's no, you don't hear about anyway, like a line of toys geared at children with autism or a line of cartoons or anything like that. You know, this is the first thing that I can think of. And, you know, I have to say that, you know, it's almost an honor to talk to somebody who thought outside of the box and said, hey, you know, we need something for kids that have autism, you know. So you said you've been doing this for a month now?
Well, it was released. We bought it ordered and had the print delivered on Christmas Eve. It was a great Santa Claus miracle there, and was able to take it to some of the comic shops here locally to have it right in time before Christmas. And then shortly after, about a week later, we sold out. And we've been replenishing the stand since, and have expanded our area, going to other counties, to the other places, and talking to other people. And everyone, you'd asked about the reception, everybody who understands what we're doing or hears about it has been exceptionally positive. They're willing to venture and risk $5 to educate themselves and to entertain themselves to learn a little bit about autism. We're not the voice. We never pretend to be, or nor will we ever be the only voice for autism. We are just one voice. This is just one story, Dave. It happens to be our story, our interpretation. There are other kids who have autism that affects them differently than it does Michael or any of the other characters and their own individual differences. But this is our story, and it's just one example of how people could perceive someone with autism.
Right. So what's the next steps? I mean, you guys are in the local comic book shops. Are you planning to go, and I know you have an online presence. Are you guys planning to go to any conventions coming up?
That is a, it's a dream. I have to tell you, Dave, sometimes I kind of get ahead of myself and I have a lot of ambitions. I will say that it was funny that you mentioned about there are no autistic related toys. We're looking to change that as well. That's already kind of being discussed by the organization, and have some great partnerships. As far as conventions go, that's certainly something that we'll consider. Expanding territory, going out to Philadelphia, to Maryland, and West. Those are all things we just want to be slow and put our best foot forward every day, whether that is focusing on writing script, collaborating with Sky. Goodness, Dave, we have spent, it's not uncommon for Sky, Angie, and I to be talking for 3 hours in an evening over everything from what the weather has been to the dynamic foreshadowing of what we want to include and ideas that we may have that we end up scrapping and coming back the next day and revisiting. It is truly a collaborative effort. So whatever is going to do the best to get us out there for more kids and for more educators, more professionals, and more families to understand about autism, then that's what we'll do. If it's a convention, we'll do it. If it's a speaking engagement, we'll do it. If it is more work, we'll do it. Because we work together quite well as a nonprofit organization and as a team. And that that truly is the biggest takeaway I have from this. That few people can say, Dave, that they enjoy doing what they do for a living and get paid for it. Fewer still can say that they enjoy doing what they're doing and with whom they're doing it. I am generally blessed and fortunate to be able to say both of those without hesitation. the circumstances that led Sky to be with us, to be on our team, was no small feat either. We found out that we had some mutual friends in common and started off with just asking Sky if he could pinch hit for some help. And in the meantime, while we were asking on the phone, Sky was able to whip out a rendition, a sketch in 5 minutes that blew us away. And he said, oh, I'll just continue on for a little bit. I'll just continue on for a little bit. And, well, here he is.
That's
usually because both you and Angie have great ideas, but you visualize it, but you verbalize it well enough that even before you finish the sentence, the vision is popping in my head, so you can't help but, you know, try to work on it. And, you know, we create characters, we create situations, we ask questions, and, you know, it's the book. Can be complicated if we want it to be, but it's supposed to be entertaining, not confusing, and that's what we're really trying to show. Because the comics of nowadays, they're good in their own right, but after a while, their pantheon, it just turns into a Tom and Jerry adventure. You know, somebody gets out of prison, the hero beats him up and puts him back in villain, and then he breaks out again 3 or 4 issues later. And, like I said, it's like Tom and Jerry, but we're creating a whole world where anything can happen because we're dealing with aliens, we're dealing with a mythical creature, dealing with, you know, situations, we're adding heroes and villains, you know, the situation that's going on in the world that you don't see elsewhere. In fact, we've broken down quite a few barriers to tell the story. We're doing cross genres. As the story goes on, you'll definitely be able to see where we added this, we did that. It's not just a straightforward sci-fi story. It's sci-fi, steampunk, slice of life. You know, they have so many different elements that we've just begun to explore, but we do have it in mind where we're going. We're not making it up as we go along.
Yeah, we've got about 18 months worth of storyboard ideas, side tangents, and kind of wrap-ups that we know that we're going to need to do. And it's not just for sales. We know that the kids want to know the story. They want to know what happens to the funny-looking little alien guy. They want to know who the guy in the blue cowl is with the sword. What's his deal? What happens to this character? Will they be featured more? What's their backstory? One of the things that we dealt with in making up the characters and helping Sky to understand and giving him a lot of creative license, I was never really one to micromanage or say this needs to happen in this certain way, mm-hmm. unless it was dealing with some facial features until Sky was caught up to speed on what exactly it was I was looking for. Now I can tell him a certain kind of anger expression and a certain muscle that need to be pulled, and he nails it. But overall, what I did was start with the characters, and I wrote up a psychological profile as though each character in the story were a client coming in for therapy services. That they each had their own unique diagnoses, everything from just, you know, minor depression to ADHD to narcissistic tendencies and traits, and what that meant in their worldview. Short-term and long-term. So when a character is talking, the situations that we have developed, even in issue one, have far-arcing scope into issue four. Quite even for some characters, even longer. A lot of thought has gone into this. I guess I could say that if I ever had anything that would amount to a legacy or an opus, this is it. This is what I offer outside of my family and friends and those who know me personally. This is what I can kind of give to the world, a chance for other people to understand one another, to accept one another as their own unique differences and their similarities. That despite whether you are Caucasian, African American, or from a distant planet, we all have similarities. We all have things upon which we can agree, disagree, or compromise somewhere in the middle. But at the end of the day, this is a story about kids. And kids kind of, they tend to get along. It's when they get to become adults that we have things like wars and other politics and other situations. Kids deserve a chance to have heroes like themselves. And That's what we try to offer, Dave.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And going back to something you had said earlier about needing, kids need someone, a hero they can identify with. You know, I was a Spider-Man fan. I'm still a Spider-Man fan because I always identified with Peter Parker. You know, the bookworm in school that got picked on and didn't have any friends, and you know, and that was you know, one of the brilliance behind that character. You know, he identified with, and that's why he's been so popular for so long. That kids got identified with the, you know, that side of the character. So I need to ask. You know, and I'm gonna. This is a question for all three of you. You know, did you guys read comics as a kid, and who were some of your favorite characters?
Sky, why don't you start off?
What was the question again? I just faded off.
Your favorite comic book character, kind of why?
Okay. Well, my favorite comic book character was actually created by this team. It's called Nexus. It was originally done by Capital Comics. Vince first put it out for a while. I think Dark Horse is trying to do it. What it is that Nexus was created by Mike Barrett and Steve Rude. It came out in the late 80s. And it's a science fiction story set in the future, science fiction superhero set in the future. Nexus was, I guess you could say he was like an outer space Nazi hunter. He had this, you know, these strange powers, but the thing was, though, he would get his visions in dreams, and he would live through the people who were tortured and killed through his dreams. And once he'd wake up, he'd have the wounds and marks on his body, and these dreams would keep on occurring until he found the person who inflicted them in their life. And it went in so, you know, the stories were so well written, and, you know, it had so many different things that added to the mystique to the character. They had politics, they had superheroes, they had, you know, all these different things. And like I said, I think it was like a perfect mesh between writer and artist, because they were both allowed to, you know, run. They collaborated, much like me, Dave and Angie. So now always hold like that, you know, high esteem for me, because the style, both writing and the comics,
yeah, King Kirby. Can't go wrong with him.
Yeah. I guess I was best first introduced to comics by Archie when I was a lot younger. You know, you pick those up now and then. My dad would get them for me. And I dropped off a little bit until they relaunched Catwoman in the 90s. And she was awesome to me, and I felt that she was just a really strong female character. Although a villain in her own way, but that's where there's a big void, and I hope that Face, and our, one of our goals with Face Value Comics is to create some strong female characters, because there's a, you know, there aren't many there to look up to, and I was always searching, and I continued to be a comic book fan, and I really loved this series called Moonshadow that was launched in the late 80s, early 90s. And it was such a great coming of age story. And I was always thinking, well, what's missing? And I just wish that there was something like that with a female hero, you know? Right. And so I continued my search until we all got together and we just decided that we're going to do it ourselves now.
And also the thing is, though, with a large majority of the comic writers and creators, you know, female writers are starting to come into their own, but for the longest time, it was guys writing female characters. And that makes as much sense as, I don't know, dogs writing a story for the perfect cat. You know, you're not living it, so how do you know what a woman really wants? So you're basically just making your female character for guys.
Right.
You're not going to get a female audience positive reaction. You know, you're going to have them portrayed a certain way.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know. I don't know if you guys heard, and we talked about this two episodes ago. But the Paul Dini, who is one of the main people over at DC, who does a lot of the animation stuff, when they had canceled the Young Justice cartoon and the Teen Titans Go, one of the things behind it was, well, they said, some of the people at Warner Animation said, this isn't going to appeal to girls. And the heads higher ups were like, we don't care. Girls don't buy toys. We're trying to just appeal to boys right now. So, yeah, there's definitely a lack for strong female characters, I think, right now, and strong stories for girls. But I digress. David, your favorite character?
My whole background on comics, I guess I wish I could say it was kind of easy. When I was just a young boy, my grandfather died, and nobody could really kind of console me so well. It was very close to him, and my grandma took me out to the corner store and pretty much said, "Hey, whatever you want to get to, you know, make you happy, go ahead." And I picked up Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends issue 1 with the Green Goblin on the cover, and read that a million times. And I always have the ties and affection of my grandfather tied to Spider-Man. And later on, was kind of a geek even in school. And when I was taking advanced biology classes in high school, I didn't always study as well as I may have should. But I do remember one time there was a multiple choice test question that was in what family is a spider. And I remember, oh wait, Spider-Man fought the arachnid. Arachnid, that looks close enough. And lo and behold, Spider-Man helped save my biology grade. So I guess I owe him a debt of gratitude. These days I'm more for the superhero who's not really super-powered. I like Iron Man for the ingenuity and building things, and for the same reasons Bruce Wayne as Batman. So those two are kind of go-tos for me. They don't have super strength or great extraplanetary powers. They are just men who use their mind and talents, and billions of dollars. But to put them into play, put their intelligence into play for good.
Yes, billions of dollars always helps, though.
Yes.
I totally understand what you're saying too. I think that's one of the reasons Iron Man appeals to me. You know, now that I'm older too, as well. It's more about the mind over machine and you know, just using his natural abilities and enhancing them. And also now to what you guys were saying earlier about having the stories plotted out, you know, 18 months worth of stories in advance, that's a great thing to hear too, because I know a lot of people who do independents, and they end up doing their first story and the second one never comes out because it takes them forever to come up with a story for it. It's like, well, you should have had a plan before you jumped into it. You know, so that's great to hear. Do you have a plan to how often you want to release them at this point?
We're still learning that. We're shooting that by March we'll have issue 2 done with the script writing. Again, it's more of a collaborative effort. And the great thing about being independent, you know, with Angie and I being married, it's a topic of conversation. It's one thing to be able to go to the office and talk to somebody about what your project you're working on. It's another thing to wake up in the morning and say, this is what I was thinking about last night, and just to start the conversation off with, what do you want for breakfast? Oh, hey, this is what I thought about for the character. What do you think? And to start off and to pepper out through the day. And then typically we talk to Sky in the evenings. So it allows some of the ideas to mature and lets him the chance to draw and come up with new ideas as well. So if I do stagnate, or if I do have a question about what direction should we take the bio droid in the character? Should we do some neat things here or ideas here? I can bounce those ideas in my own head for a while, and when I feel confident to bounce them off of Angie, and then together we'll throw them out to Sky, and then he'll think about it and bounce back and forth. So one idea isn't just really any one person's. We kind of throw it out there into what Sky has kind of dubbed the bullpen, where we even talk and get some other friends who have experience in the business and get their ideas on some ideas as well. So The idea of what we'd like to release, people have already been asking locally if we can take subscriptions, and we're encouraging people, yes, go ahead and sign up. And once we understand a little bit more of the business and the timing that it takes to ship, to print, doing those things, we'll get that down to a science and can have a more regular schedule. What regular is, I don't know. We're still learning that. We're independent. I never wrote a comic book before. I've written a lot of PhD caliber research papers and science stuff. But Dave, I got to tell you, it was a pain in the neck, and I'm sure Angie can tell you, for me to write contractions.
Well,
I admit, I've worked for different companies. I've worked for DC, did a few things for Dark Horse and all this type of stuff. And the thing is, though, with them, is that they have been in corporations. And the corporate mentality would be primarily, too many people investing in the story. They wanted to go in conjunction with the plan of making money. So if dinosaurs are big, then when we get coming out, we got to throw dinosaurs and then we're ninjas, or we got to put a certain character in every book to draw interest and all this type of stuff, rather than just us working, at our own pace, our own schedule, and keep true to the direction of where we're going. And, the independents can do that. But when you start becoming a big corporation, like the Big Five, you have to listen to editorial policies. You have to change certain things. You can't, really tell your story because, it's just like when you're talking to a friend some time back, some people find it difficult, like stores, to deal with toys that have handicaps. They believe they can't sell it, and that's just their policy. That's not the fact. So, the company says, no, we're not going to touch that. We're not going to deal with that. We're not going to, and then the list goes on of what they won't do. But when it comes time to making money, well, then everybody decides on, jumping in the cart and riding along until, as long as they can get something out of it. But they're not true to the story or the concept or the direction that you want to go.
Right. And that is the difference between art and business. It's difficult when you get as big as DC or Marvel. There's a lot of people behind that all are who want to make a profit, and the art gets lost in that. One of the things I've been thinking about, I had mentioned the guys from HB Comics earlier, and they're a brother team. They're the one brother writes, the other brother does the art. And as you were saying, that you get up in the morning and you guys can have a conversation and talk about what you want to work on. The one brother gets home from work and they go into the other brother's basement and they sit back to back and they work, all night long on the book. But one question I had to ask them, being brothers, does that, do you guys get into arguments and does that get in the way of the book sometimes? So now I need to ask Angela, are there days that it's like, ooh, I just don't want to work on the comic book today because I'm upset with him for leaving his dirty underwear in the bathroom again?
Wow, no, actually no. This has been such a fun experience, and we're both so passionate about the story and the cause. Honestly, I think that's why it works so well. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to even... for him to include my ideas sometimes. It makes me feel really happy because my 9-to-5 is very droll. So this Face Value Comics and, serving in any capacity that I can is my respite. And, we are just so focused on telling a great story, and it's truly enjoyable.
Cool. That's really nice to hear. Nice guys.
The fact is that we don't look at it as work. Fact that we're just bouncing ideas back and forth. I've met some people, I've worked with some people, I've worked in some studios when they look at their artists. I gotta doodle and sketch to get myself in the mood for drawing. That's about as stupid as, I gotta take a rest before I go to bed. You either do it or you don't. And I zen out on what I'm doing to the point that I get started in it, I'm doing it, I have a saying that says I'd far rather be full cocked and half assed.
Yeah.
So when I do something, you know, I go for it. And, you know, you can't help but, you know, love what we're doing. I really enjoy working with David and Angela. You know, they give me, you know, I'm learning from them.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice that you're very passionate about this project, and that's really cool. You know, I love meeting people that are not only artistic but are passionate about what they're doing, and you guys definitely fit that mold. You know, and it's just great, and you know, I wish you the best of success with it. You know,
thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
It's been a real eye-opener to our even our local communities and things. One thing we wanted to do was, we call it comic awareness. It's a word that we were able to submit for copyright, that it is the use of comic books and the whole genre of heroes and things of that nature to promote diversity and social awareness. And we're having a comic awareness group at our local library, and one of the things we're going to be doing is teaching basic literacy skills for kids and their families, and using comic books. That's one thing that we're doing. About a month, everything seems to be coming all this week. Different other requests for news from television, radio, and print media, to even having Autism Speaks contact us and want to have interviews. Love them or hate them, to have the attention of Autism Speaks at this stage of the game is impressive. Mm-hmm. To know that we're reaching that far out there to get the attention of an organization of that magnitude, and they've already said positive things about us, that's a real privilege. That means we're getting the word out there to lots of people. I was really humbled. A fan in Australia nominated me for an international award for autism awareness, just based on the comic book and what we're doing to promote autism awareness and diversity in the community. This comic book idea started off as just that, an idea. Like I said in the beginning, I thought it would be a neat idea if I was able to get some sketches done from some friends or something, throw them in my messenger bag and go see more clients, I would have something, whether I had to have it printed out at Staples or photocopy at the office scanner, that I would have something. That they'd actually be able to hold a comic book, to see it on the stands, and to hear people's enjoyment of it is very humbling, and it's an honor to work for and with so many people. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this, Dave, too.
Oh, no. Any opportunity to spread the word on a cause like this, I feel honored to do that. And actually, just, you know, we're getting close to the end here. But I would just like to offer, you know, because I had mentioned cons earlier. I'm involved with a lot of comic book conventions. And so to recommend... to look at smaller conventions like New York Comic Book Marketplace. It actually takes place the first weekend in March this year, and it's a one-day convention, so you don't have to get a hotel room, you don't have to do all that. It's a smaller convention, so you can just go with one box of books, get a table. You know, just again, it's just with conventions, it's not always necessarily about selling your books to people there, but to talking to other artists and other writers that happen to be there, you know, and making connections that way.
Okay.
You know, and another idea is Wizard World Philly, you know, will be coming up in June, and I will be there. And just, even if you just buy a ticket and go on Saturday and go with a stack of your books and go up to artists that you like and say, hey, you know, I want you to have a copy of this. You know, check it out. Let me know, you know, give me some feedback if you like it or not, you know, and always, you know, make connections that way.
That's great, Dave. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because that's what conventions are really about, is connecting with other artists and writers, and, you know, networking and whatnot. You know, yes, it's the fans like to go and meet these people, and that's great. And there's, you know, the pop culture, and yes, you can stand in line for an hour and get Stanley's autograph, or Captain Picard, or whatever star the week is there. But to just talk to other artists and writers is a great experience. You know, hanging out in Artist Alley is, I always enjoy it, you know, Like you were saying, you're trying to get the process down, and you know, you just talk to guys. You know, don't go up to the DC table. Go up to, you know, an artist table. Even if it's like, you know, a lower level guy, you know, maybe he's only worked on a couple books for Marvel. He's been involved with the process, you know, to say, hey, if you dig this, can you just tell me what you're, you know, how you guys normally work and get things out in a monthly, you know, process.
Right. That's a great idea, Dave. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, one thing we kind of pride ourselves on you know, history may show that we're shooting ourselves in the foot or not. I don't know. I don't think so. But people say, how are you going to compete with Marvel or Disney or DC or any of those groups? And we say we don't. We never want to compete with them because we offer a completely different product. Ours is about education and entertainment and not a bottom line. If the bottom line comes, then it does. But at the end of the day, I don't know many people outside of, you know, our team that can lay their head on their pillow and say, I did a really good thing for people today. And it made a difference. And I'm happy that we can say that individually and as a team. To see the kids at some of the shows that we're doing and things that I've already done for comic book signings, to see the kids' faces, to say, wow, you get it. You talk like I talk. How do you do that? And I don't know. I've had a lot of experience just talking to a lot of kids and understanding where they've been and understanding how they feel personally.
Right. No, definitely. And, you know, I would say to the three of you, you guys, like I said, you're definitely passionate about your project. And once it starts becoming about the business and the bottom line and trying to sell more copies, you're going to lose your passion. And don't do that. You know, just worry about the story you want to tell, the voice that you're trying to reach or you're trying to use and the people that you're trying to reach. And you'll do that, you know, and... Right, exactly. Because
yeah.
You become insincere at that point. You know,
yeah.
When you're trying to please everyone, you're insincere and you're not your own person anymore.
Right. People, you know, one thing Sky had said, and we go banter back and forth about, do I want to use this word? Is that going to offend somebody? Is this going to be seen as wrong and stuff? And, you know, there's nothing really over the top. It was just simple word choice. And I can't even now remember what the words were. But, you know, he kind of said, look, this is just one story. And if you do offend somebody, you're not doing it for, you know, an intentional reason. You're just trying to tell a story, and if they read too much into it, then you know, if they don't like it, ask you know, okay, if you don't like our story, please go ahead and pick up the other couple of pictures of Hero with Autism.
Right.
That's right, there is no others.
Yeah.
There have been other attempts for other comic book heroes and other stories about a hero with autism or a comment of a character with this, but a lot of them, I'll respect them in saying what they are, that they are good attempts and they have a good story, but they're different than us. We generally and honestly throw our hat in the ring as a comic book. That's what I said kind of early on. And as we wrap up, we're kind of reminding that we're the a comic book with the golden age of comics, where the heroes are good and the bad guys are bad. We make no apologies for how our characters behave, because it's just one story. We're not trying to appeal to every single person or say that this is how every person with autism behaves, right, or this is how a person with depression behaves. It's just one story, one voice, and you know, it's our valiant attempt to do the best work we can every day.
Right, yes.
And if it inspires others to follow in our footsteps, we, you know, go in the right directions, then, you know, good. You know, I'm sure there are other people who might need this as an inspiration to show that they can do it. There may have been many people who want to do, you know, an autistic hero comic, but they don't know anything about it, or they just have that little moment of trepidation, like, anybody be interested in it? But as I'm discovering with, you know, associating with David and Angela, everybody has a story where they know someone, or they know someone who knows someone, where autism has touched their lives. And, you know, let everybody know that it's not some evil curse that you must drown your baby in the end because, well, you know, like they used to do back in the 13th century, the child of the witch or possessed by demons. We're well past that, but there's still the stigma that it's not a good thing. But what David and Angela want to do is get people to understand it.
Right.
Understand it, deal with it, and work with it. Because, like, you know, a lot of people, it's so easy for people just to ignore or pretend that it isn't there. And that does nobody any good.
No, that is true. And understanding is always the first step to, you know, helping any problem. So as we're wrapping up here, where can people find you online?
Well, the best place for people to go is going to be our main website, facevaluecomics.com. If they're also fans of Facebook, we have over 850 organic likes on Facebook since August, and end of July, August, at Face Value Comics on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Or if they're also fans of Twitter, just at Face Value Comics. Those are some of the biggest places they can find and connect with us. We're going to be redesigning a new website, so people looking to see what we have now will be in for a pleasant surprise here in a few weeks to see the new bona fide, really crisp-looking website donated by a good friend of ours, Chris Hessenflow, and he did a great job on the web design and donated that to us. So we're really excited to be out there for public consumption.
Cool. And we're also going to be having it translated in different languages soon, too.
Yes.
Awesome. So, yeah, everyone listening, definitely go check these guys out. It's a great cause, and they have a really great story behind it. And, yeah, support them, support the cause, and help them out. Because, you know, if you guys listening don't go and help them out, then, you know, it makes it harder for them to continue on with their cause. So, with that, as always, everyone, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.